talk in broad strokes if you want.
Well, I was going to say, maybe you just kind of give us all the key takeaways right now, and then we can have a little fun with it. What can you tell us about what you got planned for tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I think the key takeaways are North Dakota's budget is in a better position than it was 2 months ago because, I mean, oil prices drive just a significant portion of our budget that doesn't necessarily equate to general fund spending and ongoing revenue and ongoing expenses. The fundamentals of what I've been telling people are the same. I want to go 2 years without any major construction projects, and I want to go 2 years without hiring any new state employees. I think we can do these things that we have delivered to the state. Costs continue to go up. I mean, healthcare costs, and I mean, a lot of that's outside of agency control. So we got to factor all of those things in. But I think that we have to curb the growth of government. And I think that we have to still deliver the services that we, that North Dakotans have come to expect without massive 10% year-over-year growth in every agency. So we'd like to hold the line for a couple of years and prove to people that we can do that.
Well, I like to hear that. I'm sure a lot of other people do as well. So state employees, that to me seems like a no-brainer, but construction projects, if we do that, are we dropping the ball on any kind of infrastructure needs like this west to east natural gas pipeline or anything else like that?
No. I'm talking buildings. And I mean, there's ones that are already in the pipe that we've done architecture work for, but I mean, I would like to take care of the things we have. One of my frustrations when I was in D.C. is we always fund new things and we don't do deferred maintenance on things we already have. I think there are plenty of things in North Dakota that kind of get pushed to the back burner because the nature of politics is everybody likes the shiny new thing. And I think we can, I mean, whether it's on our university systems or, I mean, in different places. I mean, and there's, I mean, this, none of this is hard and fast. We don't live in a hard and fast, but the answer is you have to really come justify why you need it and don't just put new decision packages in. And I mean, you can look across the state in higher ed. We've had a really good 20-year run. And when you have that, I mean, we're farmers, we're oil guys, we're commodity-based economy. We know when things are going well, you take care of the things you need to take care of. But at the same time, we can take a year off from building a bunch of, you know, new things and let's go fix some of the things that need some TLC and do it right.
You have said, Kelly, I know in the past, I forget the exact words, but you've been asking the agencies to find efficiencies and shrink the footprint of what they do. What departments do you think that are the fattest or maybe most in need of an overhaul?
Well, so I don't think an overhaul is the right word. I think the bigger your agency, the more spoilage that happens. That's just the nature of, you know, I mean, by the way, that's the same. I mean, it's not just a government thing. I think government's uniquely, you know, uniquely capable of doing it. But you can talk to any business that has grown significantly. They have growing pains.
Like, right.
I don't think it makes a lot of sense to ask. I just use the Department of Labor as an example. You know, Zach Greenberg's our labor commissioner, and they've got a really small team over there, but they have reduced their backlog and created efficiencies on their own. They're doing a really, really good job over there. But, I mean, asking them to make a 10% cut doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a small agency. They're going to give me one employee that they can't afford to lose. They're accomplishing what they need. But I also think just over the inherent, I mean, technology, systems, IT, various different things. Like, as you continue to grow and things get better, we still have systemic structural issues. So I give you a perfect example that doesn't affect the legislature, doesn't affect anybody. We require, like, 7 copies, paper copies of a grant application at the Industrial Commission. Well, Karen Tyler, who's the executive director of the Industrial Commission, brought us we don't need legislative change. She's like, we don't want this specified that you get them in 7 paper copies because nobody uses paper copies anymore.
Yep.
So just going through those things and saying, and if you have 7 paper copies, you have to have somebody take in those 7 paper copies, get them to the 7 people who are supposed to get them when that could really be one email, like one email. So I think there's a lot of places that efficiencies exist. But also, right, like everybody likes to pick on Health and Human Services, but 2/3 of their budget is federally mandated. Right? It's a $6 billion budget. $2 billion is North Dakota. $4 billion is federal pass-through dollars. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their inefficiencies aren't even created by the people who work in North Dakota. They're created by federal policy, which I got to give a lot of credit to Dr. Oz and Secretary Kennedy. They're working on making that more dynamic, and we should take advantage of that.
Yeah. We're told, I just had Michael Howe on a little bit earlier today, Secretary of State, and he said that he's being told that on Thursday, the people that are pushing for the voter initiative, the measure about free school lunch for everybody, regardless of income level in North Dakota, that they're going to deliver all their petitions. They got to sort through that. They need 31,000. They think they got 50. To me, Kelly, I shake my head at this because I feel like we've solved this problem already. And I don't know that I've asked you about this particular topic on this program before. How do you see this? I get it. If it goes to the voters, they're going to decide, and you're kind of like the rest of us, just watch and see what happens. But it feels like we've taken care of this because every kid who's hungry, who's at the right income level, gets this benefit already. What am I missing?
I'm not sure you're missing a lot, other than you're missing it has no business being in the Constitution. And when you do, constitutionally mandated spending is a really dangerous thing, because then, like, we have $111 oil right now, Steve. I've been in the oil business my entire life. You have 6 months of $111 oil. There's almost a guarantee that you're going to have the pendulum swing the other way at some point in time, and it usually stays down longer than it stays up. But when you do constitutionally mandated spending, you say that money comes out before, that money's off the table. It's spent no matter what the economic scenario is for anything else. $50 oil, $3 soybeans, it doesn't matter. That money comes out of, constitutionally, that money gets spent with no haircut under any circumstances, no matter what the economic scenario is. But I would just tell you, I've been everywhere on the school lunch thing because I don't know. I mean, you can pass anti-shaming laws. And one of the things we've never spent a lot of time trying to figure out is what is the local bad debt for school lunches? Because that's taxpayer money, even if it's not state budget money. And how many human hours of educators do we have in this really inefficient system to collect this money that doesn't get collected?
Yeah, no, it's a good question.
There's a lot of resource allocation there. But I also, there were opportunities to do this differently, and that obviously didn't happen.
So do you ever come out on something like this and say, you know, hey, look, people,
I've been really clear. I mean, if they would have passed the school lunch bill and statute, I would have signed it. I think the polling tells you North Dakotans want it, all of that. But I've been 100% clear. I don't think it has any place in the Constitution. And that's what frustrates me kind of about the whole thing.
Well, what frustrates me is it's out-of-state money coming in. They're well-organized. They have a nice website. They have a PR team. I mean, this is not organic.
I disagree with you. I think it's very North Dakota driven and very organic.
You do?
I do.
Okay. I've been told I've been told the funding for this is not from North Dakota, but if you know something different, then you know something different.
I don't know if the funding is from North Dakota, but I know the support is from North Dakota.
Oh, sure.
It's been an issue for,
there's some. Yeah. Okay. We got a couple guys.
That's a real concern, right? Because this isn't the next, this isn't the last time they're going to try and do constitutionally mandated spending. Ask California.
Oh, I'm sure we've only begun to have the fun here. Let's take a couple of calls here quick. Jeff in Fargo. Jeff, your question for Governor Armstrong.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey. I was wondering on the statements that the president said recently for child care and Medicaid and Medicare, he's saying the state should pay it and raise taxes in the state so the federal government can pay more for military. How do you feel about that?
I think this is one of those fundamental problems with Medicaid expansion and having a country that's $39 trillion in debt. I've had two different roles in this, Jeff. I was in the state legislature and I voted against Medicaid expansion, and now I'm the governor, and it's almost impossible to get rid of it once it exists. There's just far too many people that rely on it for their health care. I think that is an unrealistic goal, but unfortunately, I think as this continues to move through regardless if it's President Trump or whoever the next president is, eventually this healthcare, the cost of healthcare is going to come home. And I think all states over the course of time are going to be asked to pay more and more of this. And I think that's a real problem.
All right. Next up, Dana from Bismarck. Dana, good morning. What's your question for Governor Armstrong?
Yeah, good morning, Steve and Kelly. Kelly, why doesn't, instead of building this pipeline to ship the natural gas to the east side of the state, and I would assume some of it's for these AI centers, why don't they set up a plant to make fertilizer for our farmers that we can bring the price down and make it affordable for them to keep living?
Well, three things there. One, it's not an either or. You could build a fertilizer plant in Williston tomorrow and still build the gas plant. Like that thing, that those two things can happen. We have a lot of gas. This allows for, it's not gas for AI centers. It's gas to, one, get it out of the Bakken where it's stranded, which curtails its associated gas, so it curtails oil production. Two, it allows for every community along that line to do any kind of value-added ag they want or any kind of economic development, because the two things you need before you talk about workforce and power, our workforce and housing, is you need power and water, and this would allow that to happen. And two, the we on the fertilizer plant is the question. We've had three different fertilizer plants that got 75% of the way there since I've been involved in North Dakota in 2012, and I don't think any of them got 75.1% of the way there. They're multi-billion-dollar capital investments, and there was one in Grand Forks, there was one in Spiritwood, there was one being talked about between Williston and Minot, and they just never get home. And I think it's an access to capital and raising money in the private sector. I mean, the state's not going to build a fertilizer plant.
Well, probably they shouldn't.
We'll provide I'm not big into state-run businesses, and I don't think we do it particularly well. I mean, I'll take the bank and the mill, but I'm not sure we want to expand that footprint. But there are conversations going on. And this isn't just a North Dakota problem. Most of these are offshore and out of the United States.